This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hello and welcome to the Eurogamer newscast, and this week we're talking about Unreal Engine, metaverses, procedural generation, AI. It's all going on. Joining me this week to talk about all of that and try and understand some of it,
to listen to Tom talk about all that,
the Eurogamer news team. We've got Ed Nightingale.
Hello.
Victoria Kennedy.
Hello.
And I'm Tom Phillips, and we are coming at you after the Unreal State of, it's not State of Play, that's PlayStation, State of Unreal. Epic Games' presentation last night timed alongside Game Developers Conference GDC, and they had lots of new cool stuff about Unreal Engine 5 to show off, some new trailers for upcoming games that I think we're all pretty excited by, and a look ahead at what Fortnite has to come in the future. And what that means for bizarre, outlandish terms like the metaverse, which Epic boss Tim Sweeney likes to talk about every so often. But we'll break it down. We'll, you know, start with like what I think is some very like straightforward, cool stuff that they were showing. New things coming to Unreal Engine 5.2. Unreal Engine obviously powers a lot of video games, seemingly more and more. And some of the biggest ones on the horizon are going to be made in Unreal. And I've immediately forgotten all of the examples that I was going to give. The Witcher.
Tomb Raider,
yes.
Tomb Raider.
and many others. And the toolkit that Unreal Engine now has is very, very impressive. They started off their demo last night showing off this leafy environment and some of the cool stuff they're doing with procedural generation, where you can sort of just drop in and drop out bits of like assets and test video game levels on the fly.
Was that the driving demo?
Yeah, they started off with driving demo. They showed off a new like couple of shaders and how cool they can make things look, like reflective properties of textures and things like that. And then they kind of zoomed out a bit, and you saw them moving things around live in the editor that they've got. And, you know, like just pulling out bits of scenery, putting them in or rotating them. And then because of how smart Unreal Engine is, the level just sort of adapts itself around the bits of scenery that you put in. It's very, very cool. And then they zoomed out even further and they said, like, this tiny bit is the bit that we've actually constructed with human hands. And from that, the engine can now extrapolate kind of this much. And I mean, that's a really useful tool if you're a game developer, right?
That's amazing. Just watching the videos, my mind is just like, I cannot get over what can be done these days.
It's an interesting topic, procedural generation, but more specifically AI. I'm pretty sure that term was used to sort of extrapolate on these things. And one of the other news stories to come out of this week, actually, from a GDC talk, was the program that Ubisoft are playing around with. It's called Ghostwriter, which sort of uses AI to modulate, suggest different dialogue lines for video games. And this caused quite a bit of a stir. I don't know if you saw any of this happening, but there were a lot of people who write video games who had opinions.
Yes.
On this.
And it seems like that's being used for sort of more incidental dialogue, and, you know, not like the main story dialogue speeches. You know, it's more kind of smaller bits and pieces. But, you know, I also saw tweets from people saying, well, that could have been handed to a junior writer. That could have been given to someone who maybe needs to build up some experience. And I feel, from what you were just saying about the procedural generation, I feel a little bit torn about it, because I think when it comes to things like writing dialogue or AI art, things like that, I think that needs a human touch. That is the artistry of video games, literally, when it comes to art. And I just don't think it's fair to have an AI replicate that. Mm. When it comes to the level design stuff, I still feel like that's still someone's job to design levels. And admittedly, it's not complete from scratch. As you said, it's from that small part that then gets sort of replicated. I still feel like that's someone's job. And I would appreciate that being handcrafted. But as a baseline to sort of say, well, let's get started with that and then we can go back and tweak it later, or just as a testing or something like that, it's absolutely a very impressive tool. It is just a little bit worrying that we are getting to a point now where the computers are taking over and they can do a lot more than I think they should at this point.
You think they shouldn't be able to do as much as they can? You think Unreal Engine should stop at 5? No, 5.2, no 6. Tim Sweeney, calm down on your metaverse.
This is the intervention. Stop it, Sweeney. You've had your time. I think there's elements that are impressive. I think there's elements that are probably, I mean, look, I'm not a game designer. I'm sure there are game designers looking at this thinking, wow, this is incredible. I can't wait to use it. And that's great. I just want to make sure that we're not losing the human touch on game design.
That's my concern, particularly more with the writing, I think, for me, because as you know, and I've mentioned a few times on Newscast before, like, I love narrative driven games. Like, I play a game for a story more than I play it for, like, it's graphical, et cetera, et cetera. And for me, when I was, you know, seeing the discussion that happened with this AI generated text, I was a bit like, well, I it might seem like incidental dialogue, but it is still world building. And I love the fact that that does come from a personal place. And I was talking to a writer very recently, and they told me that actually the overarching narrative of a story, that's something that is kind of generally controlled a little bit more by the higher ups in a company. You know, they kind of know where they want their story to go, and it's then the job, they get told the plot and it's them to make the world. And so for them, they say they actually really enjoy the sort of more non-consequential, but these little like side bits, they can have a little bit more fun there. And I think it'd be a shame to take that away from someone who has this creative talent, like they're a writer, you know, or a narrative designer or whatever. You know, this is obviously something that they're very passionate about and they love doing, otherwise they wouldn't be their job in theory. And you know, you don't want to take away those other little bits of work that actually could cause or give great pleasure to people.
Hmm. It's the sort of thing you get in like logs.
Yeah.
You know, when you're, you know, I'm thinking of say Metroid Prime, where you're scanning the environment and getting logs of data, and that's world building. And yeah, I guess maybe that could be an AI, but also you want that little human touch of having little nuggets of story, like, you know, sprinkled into that. And like you said, Victoria, I really like that element of world building. And I don't think that that's something that a computer can just generate generically.
I can't think of an example off the top of my head though, at the moment, but I do remember reading somewhere about how there's some, I really wish I could remember the game, but I was reading an interview with a writer and they said that a lot of the sort of NPC general chatter was actually like in jokes from the studio, which they've included as like little Easter eggs for themselves. And I think it'd be quite sad if we then just had an AI churning out stuff that doesn't have any feeling behind it. It's just an AI generated. So,
well, Ghostwriter apparently comes recommended by Ubisoft scriptwriters, and there were lots of whoops and cheers in the audience last night as we saw the procedural generation in 5.2. I mean, at this point, you know, AIs aren't building and publishing their own games. There is definitely a need for the human input, and Ghostwriter doesn't publish anything, you know, it merely suggests it and then writers can go in and edit it. But,
well, this is after you.
I was going to say, it's I think it's a matter of balance, right? Because no one's looking at Unreal Engine and saying, well, this is a cheat. You know, I want the human crafted engine experience from my own game. I don't want, you know, an off the shelf computer language driven thing that's ubiquitous and that everyone uses. You know, we all, game designers, writers, animators, use sets of tools which simplify processes and systems. It's at what point does this become, oh, too much of an AI help? You know,
Mike is
where's that line?
With the AI help, though, and I think it was Alana Pierce that wrote this, and she mentioned about the fact that, I'm not saying this is a sort of blanket term for all writers by any means, but if I was writing something and then I had to go and fiddle with the AI tool to make it sound like, surely it's kind of, it could potentially add more work because you have to go and fiddle and adjust with what the AI has written to make it sound more natural or whatever. And like, I don't know. I don't know how these tech tools work, but it's just like another thing potentially to have to learn.
Hmm. I think the procedural generation stuff is probably a similar process, but I guess that's probably a lot easier to go in and tweak something that's been done rather than building an entire level from scratch. So I can see more of the usefulness when it comes to procedural generation. And that's also become a big selling point in certain games recently. You know, you've something like No Man's Sky would not have been possible without procedural generation, because you can't handcraft all those millions of planets. Or something like, you know, I've been playing lots of Dead Cells recently that has procedure generated levels. Returnal as well. Now, I think a lot of the pieces are handcrafted and they're just randomly generated, but I think a lot of games are building that as part of their gameplay, especially roguelites, or roguelikes, or whatever other term you want to use. So I can see for that style of game, this kind of procedure generation could even be implemented as part of it, which would be great. And I can see that being really useful for indie developers who maybe don't have the manpower to craft levels from scratch. You know, maybe that could be really useful for them. Equally, how accessible is Unreal Engine for independent developers? I don't know. I'm guessing it's incredibly expensive. So I don't know how useful that would be.
Well, we'll get onto that.
Sorry. Jumping the gun.
I think Unreal Engine, it sounds like Unreal Engine is pretty easy to get into, and Epic does have grants. Like, they want people using Unreal Engine very clearly. You know, they're trying to make it as easy as possible. The stuff we'll get onto is, you know, where that stuff gets published. But they also talked last night about all of their massive asset libraries, the fact that they own ArtStation and like megapixel scans of loads of textures, which are currently on a different place, and Sketchfab, and they are like binding these all together. And actually, a really interesting thing that flicked up on screen for a second was that they're going to start selling these packs from third-party developers to allow indies to make their own games. You know, we've seen so many stories of people kind of just, you know, borrowing assets from other people and getting found out about it. Well, one of the things that we saw in the presentation was a pack of assets from Supermassive Games with assets from their Dark Pictures anthology horror series, which, you know, you're going to be able to license and put in your own games if you want to acquire that on the Unreal Marketplace and then put it in your own game. And it made me think of how, you know, in the days of Napster, the easiest thing to do was just sort of like kitbash. It was just to like download songs. As soon as someone comes along with a more easy to use, straightforward solution, everyone's on Spotify instead. And it's a bit like that with this. I think like it's going to make game development so much easier for a lot of people to get into.
That's great. But then I think the onus is then on game developers using those assets to make sure that they're doing it in an original way. Because what I wouldn't want is for this kind of tool to have, you know, texture packs available and suddenly everyone jumps on it and games will start looking the same.
Like, it's just like copy and paste, and that's...
Yeah, it's, you know, there's not... it's great that it's accessible, but I wouldn't want that to be seen as a shortcut for them people to just be, oh, look, I'll just use this texture everywhere, and then it's, you know, suddenly my game looks like Elden Ring and it shouldn't, or whatever. you know, I think...
What's wrong with Elden Ring?
There's nothing wrong with Elden Ring, but, you know, not every game needs to look like it or animate like it.
Speaking of Lords of the Fallen...
Well, there you go. There's a segue.
Yeah, we should talk about some of the games they showed. Brief clips of Lords of the Fallen. Was it Lord of the Fallen now?
Lords of the Fallen.
Okay, but there's no longer the, so it's not the Lords of the Fallen anymore.
Yeah, it's Lords of the Fallen, yeah.
You mentioned earlier, we were talking, Ed, that it looks a little like Elden Ring.
I mean, it always did. Or at least it's a Souls game from another developer whose name I've totally forgotten. So it's already been released, but it didn't do that well I think, because it was a little bit generic. And they're now remaking it, and they're obviously using the new Unreal Engine as a showcase. And there's the shallow part of me that's now interested in this game because I want to know how good it looks. But I think that's a good tactic from them because they're remaking it. I'm sure gameplay is probably pretty similar. The story will be the same. It's just, what are they improving? Well, we're improving the visuals, so let's use the best engine possible and get some attention on it. It does look really good, though. You see the lighting engine moving. It looks like there's sort of two parallel worlds that they can place on top of each other, which is really cool. And it, to me, it looked like, okay, it's a fairly typical dark fantasy kind of world, but that's what I think people wanted Elden Ring to look like, and it didn't, because Elden Ring is not technically the best looking game in the world.
It's got ray tracing now.
It does have ray tracing now, which I'm sure maybe will tank the frame rate, but I'm going to give that a go and see what it looks like. So I looked at this and thought, actually, Lords of the Fallen, I'm much more interested in this now. I'm interested to see how it compares with the Demon's Souls remake on PS5, because that, even though it was a launch game, is still probably the best looking Souls game, and it's still a really impressive looking game now. So I'm interested to see how this is going to compare to that. But yeah, I'm suddenly a lot more interested in that in a very shallow way.
We also saw a bit of Hellblade, and the really cool tech behind that, the reason that they were showing it was that you can now, or you will be able to now, record performance capture on something as simple as an iPhone, and Unreal Engine will just extrapolate it out, apply it to one of their metahuman people models, and it looks really good, and it's seemingly really easy to do.
That clip, I saw that last night and again this morning. I couldn't take my eyes off it. It was so good.
With Melina Jurgens.
It's just, the expressions and everything.
The thing, it's captured like for like. So that's going to really improve lip syncing and animation for. And also will be great for actors to sort of, you know, it's not just you're providing the voice to a model. It's like, well, you are the character. And I know, obviously, we have that already, but to a much greater extent. I think that would be great. And does that mean that this is speeding up development of that game and we can get it soon?
This is all we want to know. These are the important questions.
When can I play it?
That game has been in the oven for a while. Okay, well, I'm going to play devil's advocate, right? We were talking earlier about how procedural generation, AI, script writing, you know, these are people's jobs, right? Is what we've seen last night someone's job, an animator's job, that is just being replicated in seconds by an AI using the new MetaHuman animator? Was that someone's job that's just gone out the window because they can just turn performance capture from an iPhone in a couple of seconds to a pretty polished scene?
I mean, I think it depends on the game. I think if it's aiming for that photorealistic vibe, then it makes sense to have the most realistic animations, and then if that is literally humans and you're recording it and replicating it, then that would make sense. If it's, you know, you're not going to use that for, I don't know, like a pixel art game, because then that's, you know, someone's job to have different types of animations, or maybe you want something more cartoonish or something else. So I think it will depend on the game as to whether that kind of realistic animation is suitable.
Okay. So you're not out of a job.
Which is me fence sitting.
You're not out of your job, you just need a different job.
Yeah. Okay. Go work at a different CDO.
See, this is me. Like, I realised that I was very, like, snarky about the writing AI. But then I don't know if that's me coming from someone who loves the written word, whereas I don't have as much understanding about how animation, etc. works. So maybe that's on me, maybe. And I was more excited about the animation potential than I was about the writing potential from everything that's come out over the last few days. But maybe that is my ignorance of animation as a whole. But I still can't go over that video of Hellblade. Like, it was just phenomenal. But as Ed said, you know, that sort of tech is not going to work for every game, because you can't imagine having that on, you know, like you said, a little sort of side scroller pixel game. That just is not something that you need for that. So, yeah. I'm on the fence as well. In short, I echo what Ed said.
I'm sort of on the fence with all of it, because I think that there's always an implementation for this kind of stuff that could be useful if used in the right way. But there's also the possibility of developers, I guess, abusing this kind of system to make an entirely, you know, AI created game. Well, not entirely, maybe, but, you know, just too much AI that then it doesn't seem personal. It doesn't have the human touch. But mm-hmm. I would like to think that when playing that game, people would see that and players would pick up on that and notice this feels bland, or, you know, this lacks a bit of humanity to it.
Mm. I'm definitely all for tools that make someone's job easier. Like even things like, you know, with like our formatting of articles, like we've always suggested ways like, oh, maybe we could have, you know, this implemented into it just to make it more streamlined. That sort of thing I'm not against at all. It's when the AI, etc., starts replacing jobs I'm not happy with. So I'm anything to make life easier and to make a job more effective, but not completely override the job as a whole.
Yes, AI in journalism is a topic that we do not have time to get into today, but it's certainly a discussion. We mentioned earlier that there's been there was stuff in the showcase last night about the publishing of these things. And a big part of Epic Games' plans is Fortnite, because Epic Games develops Fortnite, and Fortnite is played by millions and millions of people. And if you wanted, I guess, not a storefront, because a lot of these things are just going to be available in Fortnite to play, but a way to access all of this stuff that people are building, Fortnite is going to be an ecosystem. That's how they referred to it last night, where you can play this stuff. And they showed off some brief clips of experiences which look very un-Fortnite-y, but you could now play in Fortnite. And through the power of Unreal Editor, which basically layers in all of those Unreal Engine features into a PC editor, you can publish experiences directly into Fortnite. As of now, I was playing a few of these last night. There was a sort of brief cave exploration thing that Epic Games had done, a puzzly thing in a sci-fi environment, and then something that was quite clearly a ripoff of Call of Duty Modern Warfare. They were okay. There were like three experiences that people who've had early access to Unreal Engine, UEFN is the shorthand name, Unreal Editor for Fortnite. And one of them was a Sea of Thieves attempt, which right now is extremely basic, but it's kind of fun to see. And you can just see where this stuff is going. I genuinely think it's a bit of a revelation and a bit of a revolution, really. It's another adaptation for Fortnite, which started off as a PvE game, then a battle royale, then it added a creative mode, and now it's adding kind of a creative mode 2.0 powered by all of this stuff in Unreal Engine 5. And you can, if you know Unreal Engine 5, build this stuff and just slot it in there and be compensated. Another big thing they announced was their new monetization strategy, Creator Economy 2.0, where people who create this stuff are reimbursed. Well, they are paid a share of some of the money that Fortnite makes, which is a lot. Based on various engagement metrics. So, you know, how often people play your game, when they come back to it, how long they spend in there.
So for someone who does not really play Fortnite at all, I obviously know what it is. Are these creations, are they something that you would have to, like in Roblox, is there like a hub world where you then can select a game that you then enter into? Or is it something that's just there on the map?
Yeah, so Fortnite has a main menu and it almost looks like Netflix. You know, it's just like lots and lots of little squares, and at the top are the Epic Games made games like Battle Royale, and Save the World is still there too, the original PvE one, and various other modes that they have, usually with the same Battle Royale map. And then underneath that, you know, with basically equal billing, are all of these things that the community has made, and the game has shifted over time to really give equal billing to stuff, you know, like the Battle Royale mode that we all know Fortnite as, really. and all of this other stuff that gets made as well. And they said last night that 40% of people's time is now spent not in Battle Royale, but in these other experiences too. It's very like Roblox. That's a really good analogy, because Roblox has, you know, it's built on all of these other experiences that people build. Fortnite has, you know, like the hook, I guess, of the Battle Royale and the seasonal model there. It changes all the time. There's always cool stuff that they're adding. So you might, you know, initially load up Fortnite to go do this week's Battle Pass challenge. But while you're there, you see, oh, you know, this looks fun. It's like a cool fishing mini game. I'll give that a try. Which leads me very nicely onto Everywhere, which is another game which is trying to do exactly this. And to keep it very brief, you can read about Everywhere on Eurogamer right now, once this is published. And it's an attempt by some very smart people, some of whom used to work on Grand Theft Auto at Rockstar. And they are building a platform like Roblox and Fortnite, where you can create and publish your own experiences. They have a hub world. It reminded me a little bit of PlayStation Home, where you can access all of this stuff in a 3D virtual space, a big 3D virtual space. And they haven't discussed their revenue model yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's similar, where creators are sort of encouraged to create in Everywhere. And their hook, rather than Fortnite having a battle royale, is that they're going to be doing these AAA, really big budget experiences. The first of which is called, well, it's called Mind's Eye, and the first episode of which is a single player action adventure game with like sci-fi elements. So that's the hook for them. You know, you come in, you play the latest episode of this thing that we're making by some of the people who used to make GTA. And while you're there, you probably check out some of this creative content. And it's fascinating to see lots of games heading this way. And Tim Sweeney, wrapping up last night, sort of talked about the open metaverse, which is not, you know, you sat in a pod with a VR headset accessing everything through one singular thing, but it's all of these experiences now starting to be quite similar. Like, Everywhere is made in Unreal Engine and its creative tools are powered by Unreal Engine, and yet it's a completely different closed garden metaverse thing to Fortnite. So it's going to be really interesting to see. I have no idea if Everywhere is gonna be everywhere in the future, but it's a huge, huge gamble from them, and I can't wait to see how it plays out.
I mean, it's amazing to see like how far user-generated content has come, because I remember playing Little Big Planet and people creating, you know, 2D side-scrolling levels, and that was quite, well, I never had the patience to build a level, but that seemed relatively simple to sort of place things together, and that was kind of, UGC was this big new thing, and now it's, you know, becoming not just, oh, you create a level, but you can create a whole game within a game.
Yeah.
With tools that, I mean, I don't know how accessible these Unreal tools will be in Fortnite, but presumably it's, you know, not too difficult to make something and make something really impressive. So it's wild to see how far things have come in the last, actually, I'm not going to say that, because I bet Little Big Planet came out ages ago and it feels like 2 years ago, but
it's a PlayStation 3 game, Ed, which, exactly, as we've recently been discussing, is now retro.
Oh, I just saw Ed age.
Yeah.
In a moment. Oof. I remember playing Mario Maker. That was my attempt at making something for the community. It wasn't very good.
Nintendo lagging behind, of course.
But yeah, Mario Maker. I remember doing that.
It was really interesting to hear Tim Sweeney talk about how, I guess, yeah, user-generated stuff is becoming, you know, is the next big thing in the industry. And it makes sense if you're a business, because, you know, you basically hand over some control, but you are allowing millions of people to do development work for you, and at the same time keep people engaged in your own little corner of this open metaverse, as he called it. But it was very similar to what Leslie Benz is, the GTA former producer, who's now building this everywhere game or platform or whatever you want to call it, was saying that, you know, they've seen similar. And something he said is, we don't want to be a studio where we just do sequels, you know. So you've this single player thing they're making is Mind's Eye, and actually in future it won't be single player, they'll add in multiplayer bits, but they don't want to just be like Mind's Eye 2, Mind's Eye 3, which I thought was an interesting way of saying it, because his former employer, Rockstar, I mean, that's what they do. They do GTA 3 and 4 and 5 and San Andreas and 6 and, you know, eventually. But GTA themselves is having huge success with GTA Online. And if you can get a service which is sticky and keeps people in it, that's sort of it, really.
I think it's great that they're also sharing money, so people can, you know, potentially, I guess, make money out of their creations in a positive way. And I can see a lot of people using this as a way to get into game design. A lot of young people saying, oh, I've made this level and it's really successful, and, you know, maybe that's where careers start. And I can see that being a really positive step. I guess the flip side of all that is that I then look at something like Roblox, which has a lot of problems with moderation and exploitation and things like that. And I think that Fortnite is already massive. This could make it even bigger, but they're going to have, I really hope they've got good moderation tools in there to make sure that people are protected and, you know, the right sort of content is being made.
That would definitely be my concern, especially, you know, as a parent. I don't let my kids near Roblox. I know what it is because of my job, but I don't let my kids near Roblox for the exact reasons you said. There's too much from too many people, and I don't feel it's moderated enough. And that would be a very real concern for me for anything that has this, you know, potentially not snowballing, because that makes it sound negative, but if it does get too big, who's controlling all that? Keeping an eye on it.
I also feel I understand better now what the potential of a metaverse could be. Because I think metaverse just has a bit of a dirty word. It is considered a bit of a dirty word. And it's, you know, it's kind of Mark Zuckerberg with a headset on and a dodgy avatar. And it's like, why would I want to live in that world? But when you look at something now that like Epic are doing with Fortnite, and it's sort of all these experiences under one umbrella, and there's so much potential to that, and the connections that can be made there, and the connections with their own tools, I can see how that is actually really impressive, and how that can grow to be incredible. And I guess, is, as you said, with everywhere coming as well, that is really the next big thing in gaming, really.
I just keep picturing Ready Player One, that film. So,
yeah, maybe not in 10 years, but you're certainly seeing some similarities starting to appear. Whether it needs VR or not, well, that's a whole other discussion. Right, well, that is what Epic Games had to show last night, and it's safe to say that it impressed a lot of people and sparked a lot of conversations. And thank you for joining us.
Before we go, Victoria. Can I ask you, sorry, just because you are a Fortnite player, where do you sit? Because I saw quite a lot of debate about this is not the Fortnite I love on Twitter, etc. last night. Where do you stand on what they're doing?
Interesting. I think that the game has already had creative stuff in it for a while, and that's where the needle has been sort of been moving towards in terms of their focus. It's at least equally focused now towards Fortnite being a platform where creative stuff is as important as their battle royale, but they will always need a hook for people to come back to Fortnite, and battle royale is the perfect hook for that. It's constantly changing. It's going to be a long time, I think, before they stop development on that. And that's what I think as a Fortnite player, you know, that would be my worry. But actually seeing how they want Fortnite to be this place where all this stuff is included, it just encourages me that to keep the importance of that game as their shop front, you know, their window front for what you can do in Unreal Engine, not only for players but also for developers. And as journalists, you know, like, I can see us covering, you know, like we covered stuff that people are making dreams, all these weird and wonderful experiences. And for Epic Games, you know, they've got the storefront, they've got the creation tools, they've got the game, they've got it all wrapped up. And it's perfect for them. You know, this is basically people that you've handed over control of your engine and all the stuff that you can build in it to this, you know, audience of developers with a relatively easy to use toolkit, but also to an audience of millions. And that's the best way of getting this stuff surfaced in Fortnite. So, but you've got to keep that Fortnite experience relevant. And that's what Battle Royale does. And that's why, if you look at what Everywhere is doing, that's why there is that single, not single player, because it will be multiplayer later. It's just single player in the first chapter. But the that's why they've got this AAA experience that they've built themselves built in. It's exactly the same. That is their Fortnite Battle Royale. Whether it can be as attractive to get people into Everywhere or not remains to be seen. But I think you need something to sort of draw people in, and then once they're there, they can experience all this other stuff. So yeah, I'm sure that the adventures of Fishstick and Peely the Banana will continue for a while yet.
Can't wait for that.
And also because, like,
what names?
Last season was medieval. This season is sort of Neo-Tokyo cyberpunk. And all of these assets that they create, after they've been in the game, they rotate into the creative portions of the game. So, you know, just as there's this library of stuff that people are going to be able to pull from to make their own experiences from third-party people, this is all... Every season of Fortnite is basically just introducing assets, but also gameplay mechanics and new items and weapons for people to play around with and make their own experiences. Another great reason why Fortnite will continue is because, you know, it's Epic just continually adding to the pool of resources available to people in the creative mode. So yeah, another good reason why it'll be around for a while. Right, I could talk about this all day, but no one wants to hear that. So thank you, Ed and Victoria, for joining us. Ever, where can people find you on Twitter, Ed?
You can find me at @ed_knights.
Victoria?
I am Little Chop Shop Gal.
And I'm at Tom Phillips, EG. Thanks for joining, everyone. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
See you then.
Bye.